The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
The title of the shiur this evening is Have the Liberals of the World. In particular, we're referring to the Western world. Have the liberals of the world gone too far? This evening I would like to have an in-depth examination of the world liberal movement. Maybe just hold it for a minute and let them. We're living in an era now already for the past century, I would say, where we have seen enormous advances in many areas of modern civilization. And of achievement, which is so stark that it makes the previous centuries look like the Dark Ages. And this is in the physical world. For example, there have been enormous advances in science, high tech, computers, aeronautics, communications, space programs, developments of synthetics, and we could go on and on and on. Also in healthcare, medicine, psychiatry, super specializations. And all of this has brought to the masses of the Western world, and today also to the Eastern world, a far greater standard of living than they were ever accustomed to before, and a far greater standard of health and prosperity and conveniences and luxuries. This is for certain, and I don't think anyone will argue at this point. But at the same time, we see, contrary to this, a cross current, strong forces of a cross current, which is almost what we would classify as a phenomena, something that is difficult to understand. Also, during these past years, this past half century or century, and that is the enormous deterioration and destruction of the world at the religious, moral, and social levels. As far as the world has advanced physically, scientifically, it has regressed morally and socially. There were great leaders, Torah leaders, of the generations of the past that saw this coming. And they wrote about it extensively. Amongst them was the famous Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, where many, many times he would write and he would speak of this great deterioration. And that unless something is done, it'll bring churban. It'll bring self-destruction to the world. But not very many people listened to these early warnings. We're to the point today, this is perhaps considered the number one problem in the world. Elections platforms were based on ethical issues or moral issues or social issues. Now on this point, let me elaborate a bit. We won't have time to spell this out at great length, But just to go into a few areas where we have seen this enormous deterioration. First of all, we'll take an area of bloodshed, violence, murder. In the international sphere, this century has witnessed more wars and greater wars than history can remember. Richard Nixon, in a book he wrote recently, lists that 100 wars took place in this century. And not only small wars. A new phrase was coined in this century. A world war. A Weltkrieg. This was a phrase that the world didn't know before. There was World War I. There was World War II. There was Korea. There was Vietnam. Persian Gulf War. The 40-year Cold War with Russia. Just to mention some of the international wars. It is written that Stalin murdered 60 million Russians. 60 million Russians, or people of the Soviet Union. Hitler, Yamach Shemo, they estimated, killed 20 to 25 million innocent people. Not soldiers, not people that were lost in the war, but innocent people. And, to make a long story short, governments are impotent to stop these wars and to create peace. There was the League of Nations, there was the United Nations, there were the superpowers, whatever you want. But they've come to their own conclusion that they are impotent. They cannot bring world peace. This is just to set aside all the debate that we haven't seen world peace. And all of our advancements and all of our technological progress and scientific progress seems to have only made us into more efficient and deadly warriors. That's at the international sphere. In the domestic sphere, Western civilizations are witnessing an acceleration of crime and a collapse of law and order that they never had experienced in those countries before. There was a time in England when the bobbies could control street crime with a nightstick. Today this would be ludicrous. Not long ago, it was maybe 30 years ago, one of the greatest crimes of the century took place. It was called the Great Train Robbery, which the largest sum of money in modern times was stolen. The criminals didn't carry guns. They carried only sticks. Because that way, they said, if they're caught, so the punishment will be much less. This is how people used to commit crimes in those days. What do we have today? We have mafia, but we have more than that. The mafia has complained. The infamous Italian mafia has complained that things have gone out of hand. They used to never kill innocent citizens, innocent bystanders. And today the street mafia has taken over, where there's rampant murder. There's the drug traffic, murder galore, racial violence. Now, in our country, we don't have to look far to see racial violence, but this is not a South African problem. Just a few months ago, the United States witnessed its worst riot in its history. Now that's a mouthful. For a country of over 200 million people, to say that it was the worst riot in their history, the Los Angeles riots, you could imagine what that was. Last year, unfortunately, there was racial tensions. Jews were involved. Racial tensions in Crown Heights. It's a neighborhood in Brooklyn. The city sent in 5,000 policemen to control it. 5,000 policemen, that's an army. Armed bank robberies. This is a way of life. Break-in and theft, street violence, rape, common occurrences. And what kind of weapons do they carry? Do they carry sticks? They're carrying AK guns. And again, the governments and the court systems are impotent to control this. Whether they don't want to control it, or whether they cannot control it, whatever the reason is, it is not being controlled. The law systems are bogged down with all types of politics or technicalities. The systems where even to convict the great or the infamous, ruthless drug barons, it can take years to get them on income tax evasion so they can put them away for a few years. We'll go to another area. The area of integrity, business ethics, honesty. Everyone is talking about it. All over the world, they're asking what happened with business ethics. What happened with business integrity? White collar crimes. We read about junk bonds, savings and loans collapse in the United States, fraud, embezzlement, price fixing, cartels, profiteering, greed. This is the area of business ethics. Go to another area. Immorality and promiscuity. We have witnessed in the last few decades a regression of moral decay and the destruction of the home, which is the cornerstone of society and civilization, which has been unequaled in modern history. For example, we live in a time today of liberal media, free press. This means abolishment of censorship. This means pornography and anything else like that. Let me just read what was printed in this month's issue of the Reader's Digest, December 1992. The difficulty in trying to present sex as a moral issue is that our culture is permeated with sexual imagery. A typical American adolescent viewed nearly 14,000 instances of sexual material during the 1987-88 TV season alone, one study showed. 14,000 instances of sexual material on TV during the 1987-88 season. That's not counting what teens are exposed to in movies, magazines, advertising, billboards. We live in a time nudity on the beaches. We've seen mixed hostels and dormitories on the campuses. Premarital sex, the acceptance of it, live-in partners, rejection of the institution of marriage, new norms in extramarital sex, adultery, homosexuality, lesbianism. What have been the byproducts of all of this? Not a pretty picture. It's caused illegitimacy. Children without parents, divorce in broken homes, tremendous pressure on social and welfare projects, legalized and illegal abortions. Let me just read something on that. In Time Magazine, May 4th, 1992. It was a few months ago. 1.6 million abortions take place in the United States every year. We are not speaking about some spontaneous abortions. 1.6 million abortions take place in America each year. This represents almost one quarter of all pregnancies. That means almost 25% of all pregnancies in America will choose, the mother will choose to have an abortion. 46% of all American women will have had one abortion by age of 45. 46%, almost one out of every two women will have had an abortion in America. 11% of all abortions are by teenage girls under 18. These are statistics published in Time Magazine on May 14, 1992. This was an election issue. And President Bush wanted to have harsher laws controlling abortion. And some say that that was one of the issues that caused him to lose the election, because he lost the woman vote. We'll go further. Byproducts of this: rampant rape, and then a new phrase we've coined in our generation, gang rape. Sexual abuse of children and incest. Now, incidentally, if anyone thinks that we are over dramatizing or we are over exaggerating, the psychologists and the sociologists will tell you that we are under exaggerating, underestimating, and under dramatizing, because they say they have statistics only for reported cases. And most cases go unreported. And they say it's far worse than the statistics. When it comes to abuse, sexual abuse and incest, in 1991, just a year ago, a confidential questionnaire was given to South African university males, which revealed, according to the answers, that 57% of all South African university males were sexually abused in their childhood. 57%. And this is usually by parents, relatives, or guardians. The sociologists estimate that in female children, the ratio would be over three times that amount. And these are university, so this is from the higher educated and higher income class. And the ratio goes up for the lower income class. In France, 50 to 60,000 children per year are sexually abused. In the Irish Republic, one in four females before the age 18. In England, the crisis line, incest line, receives 1,500 calls per week. We've seen in this generation the acceleration of prostitution, white slave trade, male and child prostitution, international syndicates, wife beating, child beating, psychiatric problems galore, suicide, and the advent of AIDS. So that's in the area of immorality and promiscuity. Let's go to another area, Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz is what in Yiddish they always said, Zaya Mensch. Be a mensch. A person has to be a gentleman, a human being. He should be frum. He should keep Torah and mitzvahs. But everyone must be a mensch. Now, wasn't long ago, in our father's times or grandfather's times, when there was what is known as the age-old work ethic. A man took pride and he took honor in having a job, in doing an honest day's work. He who enjoys the work of and the fruits of his hands will be fortunate and good for him in this world and the next world. He took pride in being able to say that he would give outstanding value and skill craftsmanship and the best service he was capable to his customers. And we used to hear, making an honest living. Honesty is the best policy. We used to hear a good name. Man took pride in his name. Our generations have seen this traded in. It was traded in for the hippies and the yippies, who glorified the concept of being a bum and a tramp amongst the youth of the world. It was traded in for long extended courses in university that could have been done in half the time or one third of the time, but under the guise that let the child experience campus life, let him enjoy campus life. The fact is, our fathers and grandfathers, most of them, if they didn't go to university, and if they did go to university, they went on the job. They're working all day and going at night. I was speaking to there was not long ago, Rabbi Hilovitz. He should be well and strong. He used to be a rov in this community of the Hasidic shul. Now he lives in Eretz Yisrael. He's a person very, very old, well into his 80s. He was telling me he grew up in Russia, white Russia, Russia. He was telling me that in his day, a man who was 50 or 55, because life was so hard, was already weak. He was old, he was tired. It was considered old age already, 50 or 55. If you had to achieve something, you had to achieve it before that time. And I stopped to think. There are many people that at 30 years old, they're only coming out of university, super specialists. What would they have done then? And the work ethic has been traded in for a year of foreign travel via backpacking. Let the young fella have a good time. Or it's been traded in for the so-called welfare and social programs, where it pays more for a person to be unemployed than employed. South Africa doesn't have too many of these. But many countries in Europe and the United States have many social and welfare programs where people will tell you, it does not pay for me to get a job because I can make more being unemployed than employed. Or for the strong unions, we've traded in for this all-powerful unions who guarantee high returns to employees for low productivity. And this is a fact. The fact is, this is what has brought down Western economy. There was one time Western economy was the industrial muscle of the world in the old days. And they'll tell you why, because they put in a good hard day's work. From early in the morning till nighttime, and an honest hard day's work. And today, and that's being done in the Far East, and today we're seeing the decay of Western society, Western economies, because of this. The unions demand top wages, regardless of merit, regardless of hard work. And not only do they demand that, but they demand low productivity. In America, there are many, many unions that will not allow one employee to do a little more than his limited responsibility, even though he's capable of doing it, because then the other employee won't be necessary and he'll be absorbing someone else's job. So it's a system to keep everyone employed whether there is work for them or not. And that system can only lead to bankruptcy, which it has. This is what Margaret Thatcher tried to fight against in England. Another area in Der Herz. It used to be what was known as a person should be a gentleman, dignified, elegant, courteous, good language. What do we see today? A man, sometimes, he would use a vulgar language in private. Today in public, the one in public, on the media, you see the most profane, vile, vulgar language being used all of the time in literature and on the stage, in the media. And it's infiltrated in everything to the point where not only do men use it, but even women use it, which was unheard of. I mean, a man would never use a vile word in presence of a woman 30, 40 years ago. Now women use it in the media in front of millions of people. Used to be, they used to say, dress wie ein Mensch. Dress nicely. This person took pride how he dressed. Today, either the dress is sexually abusive or totally improper or like a tramp. Go on the campuses today. They look like a bunch of bums. They could never get a job anywhere like that. I once had a couple of young girls came to my house. They were looking for one of my sons. So I told him there were a couple of girls here. They looked like they were from Hillbrow. He says, Hillbrow? He says, these are from fine Santon Jewish families. He says, this is campus youth. This is the way they dress. So that's the area of Der Herz. That, in a nutshell, is an elaboration of the world as it is. From the physical perspective, we have seen advancement and growth which has been unparalleled and which has made the last century look like the Dark Ages. But from the social and the moral, the ethical and the religious perspective, these values, we have seen a degeneration, almost a total crosswind, total cross current, a degeneration, a deterioration, a destruction, unparalleled, that makes this century look like the Dark Ages. Compare it to the centuries before. When we look into the sphere of violence, of crime, of honesty and integrity, of morals, of Der Herz. Now, one of the most powerful movements that has been in the world arena, especially in the Western world, in the last 50 to 100 years, has been what we call the liberal movement. And this has become the vogue, become fashionable. We hear and we are fed a diet of a vocabulary with such words as liberal-minded, liberal circles, freedom, individual rights, democracy. Although liberals shouldn't have anything to do with democracy, because there are plenty of conservative parties in democracy also, but nevertheless, democratic, free thinking, progressive thinking, modern thought. And to the converse, if heaven forbid anyone will want to stand up against the liberals, against such liberal thinking, then he's out of step. He's not progressive. He's not liberal minded. He's against freedom. He's undemocratic. He's against modern thinking. He's against individual rights. This is the diet of words that we've been fed for the past half a century or a century or so. And unfortunately, especially catches on with the youth. Youth at the campuses, where they become very, very powerful pawns in the hands of the liberal movement. The Russia knew, they knew what to do with this. They used to work very, very hard on the campuses, because they knew anything that looked like a liberal movement, they could get a lot of students behind it. Now let's examine this in depth for a few minutes. When we speak of liberal movement, I'm using this in not in a narrow confine or limitations. I'm not speaking of a particular political issue, nor am I speaking of a particular political party here or anywhere. I'm using it in a broader definition, in what its real definition is. The word liberal means to liberate. This is where the word comes from, to liberate. The quest for liberation, the quest for freedom, to free oneself from some type of constraining or shackling force that hitherto existed. This is what the word liberal means. The dictionary's definition of liberal is along this vein. It says a movement or a theory that advocates social or political reform or progress, to reform something that was there before, to free oneself from something that was there before, advocating individual freedom. Now, all liberal groups have this in common: to liberate oneself, to free oneself from something that was a restraint on he as an individual or a society as a whole. Now, no one can have objections to free oneself from something that hitherto existed if it was a wrong force upon him. For example, if heaven forbid were under the force of a tyrant, so it calls for being liberated. We want to liberate ourselves from the evil tyrant. Or, for example, if there are unjust laws, then it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to liberate ourselves from persecution, from unjust laws. Jews always suffered pogroms and persecution and unfair suppression. It's a mitzvah to liberate oneself from this. Or, for example, slavery. Someone wants to make a person a slave. It's a mitzvah to liberate oneself from this. But what about when we speak of a blind liberalism? To liberate oneself for the sake of being free. What are you being free from? That's not the discussion. The discussion is to be free. Or a total liberalization. A person wants to become totally free of any restraint, of any parameter, That type of liberal movement will be machri vesa olam, will be bring destruction to the world, will bring destruction to society. And I'll explain. Not long ago we learned in Parshas Nayach that after the great flood, it states, Vayihi chol ha'aretz sof echos u'dvorim achodim. All of the nations of the world were like one big nation. They were all one language. And they came to a place where they could unite themselves. And then they said, let us build a great, massive tower. A city, a great city and a great tower. And the head of the tower will go into the heavens. And Nasalonu shame, we will make for ourselves an everlasting name, lest we will be scattered over the entire earth. The sages want to know what did they want? What was bothering them? The sages tell us in Masechta Sanhedrin that actually there were three groups. They all had a common goal, a common denominator, but there were three groups. One said, we'll go up there and we'll have an everlasting name. Another said, we will go up there and we'll make war with heaven. Another said, we'll go up there and we will commit idolatry. What was their motive? Their motive was they wanted to free themselves from the laws of the universe. They wanted to free themselves from the laws of the Almighty, from the constraints of the Almighty. They had just lived through a flood, and they saw that the Almighty, with his nature, placed heavy parameters and heavy strains, heavy restraints and heavy limitations on society. When the people did not fulfill his will, he destroyed the world. They weren't happy with this. They weren't happy with this at all. And they said, let us go up there because we are all one nation now. Imagine the entire world molded into one force. It's an enormous force. And we will make war and free ourselves. This was the first liberal group that the Torah speaks about. What was their error? The error was they were trying to liberate themselves from the laws and the dictates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed on man and on the Almighty. Excuse me, and on man and on the world. The Almighty gave seven mitzvahs. He gave six to the first man, then to Noah, seven mitzvahs. These seven mitzvahs that he gave to man, these represented a structure of parameters, a code of conduct, constraints, where he told man, walk within these bounds. Walk within these limitations. To Israel, he gave more. He gave 613 mitzvahs. And he gave 365 negative commandments that were restraints for Israel. And he told the world, he wants man to seek perfection. Not seek liberation, but to seek perfection. And perfection means yosher, when a man is exactly upright, perfect, not straying to the right and not straying to the left, not deviating to the side. And in order to achieve this, then man has to walk straight. And he was given boundaries. He was given signposts to tell him when he's deviating to the right and when he's deviating to the left in order to attain this perfection. The Maral brings that the reason why 7 mitzvahs were given to the world, because in the physical world we find a total of 6 dimensions. You take, for example, a physical cube. So you'll have a top and a bottom, a right side, a left side, and a front side, and a back side. You cannot find more than 6 dimensions in the world. So that means that there are 6 boundaries for the world. Each mitzvah that was given to man represents another boundary. And then the 7th was that he to bring him exactly to the middle. This was what was given to the world. Klal Yisrael, from them was demanded a greater perfection, to be more perfect. To be more perfect, perfect meant more boundaries, more parameters, more constraints. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told man, Bochatem Bechayim, choose between good and evil and choose life. He didn't tell man to liberate yourself. He told him, be perfect. Choose what is perfectly upright. The Dor HaFloga, this generation that wanted to build the tower, they didn't want any of these constraints. So they wanted to free themselves. A person will free himself from all codes of conduct, from all boundaries, then he wouldn't be much of a human being anymore. He would be a wild animal. Worse than a wild animal. Because even a wild animal was given instincts, instinctive restraints. And so this is what the law that the Almighty gave to the world and the direction that he gave to the world is the antithesis of total liberalism, of a blind liberalism. This serves as the heart of civilization and the heart of society. Society is a society because it has its boundaries, where everyone is required to walk within them. Civilization is civilization because it has its parameters. This is the heart of society and civilization. This is the heart of interaction between people. And this gives conscience to people. It gives duty to people, responsibility, and accountability. And that generation, they didn't want duty. They didn't want responsibility. They didn't want conscience. And least of all, they didn't want accountability. And blind liberalism is the same. They don't want to be accountable for their actions. They don't want to be responsible for their actions. They want to be free. Free of any duty and conscience. Now, the responsibility to administer this law, this universal law that was given to the world by the Almighty, this responsibility was given over to the court systems of the world. One of the mitzvahs that was given to the sons of Noah, one of the 7 mitzvahs, was dinim, that they have to set up court systems to see that these laws are kept. This is where we get our traditional court system from. And to Klal Yisrael was given even additional court systems because they have so much more to administer. Klal Yisrael was given the Botei Dinim, the Sanhedrin, was given a Melech, a king, that his duty was to see that the laws of the Torah were carried out and they were administered and they were enforced. Now, this is why so many places in the Torah it states, Shoftim v'shotrim titen l'cho. You shall place judges in front of you. You shall have enforcement agencies in front of you to see that these boundaries are kept. Or like the Chazal tell us, Le'olam Yispalel, a person should always pray Bishlei Malchus, for the peace of the kingdom or for the peace of the government. Vilmole Meira Malchus, because if the fear of the government does not exist, Ish Esrehu Chaim Balo, then one man will swallow his fellow man alive. It's interesting what the Chazal, what the sages are telling us. We must always pray that the government of the land is strong and healthy, so that the fear of the government is cast on the citizens of the land. This is what the sages say. Why? It would be much nicer to live where we don't have to worry about the government, we don't have to worry about laws, we don't have to worry about policemen. Let every man do as he sees fit. So the sages tell us, because if not, then Ish es chaveiro chayim balo, one man will swallow up his fellow man alive, and that's the situation that we have today. And the Gemara goes further. The Gemara says it will be just like dogim shebayam, like the fish of the sea. There's no government in the fish of the sea. So the larger one swallows up the smaller one. The most powerful one will swallow up the weaker one. Where there is government and strong government, then the welfare of all of the citizens hopefully will be taken care of. It's a good government. Where there is weak government and no government, then the welfare of the strong ones will be, the mighty will prevail. But the rest will be swallowed up like the fish of the sea. One of the weak areas that we have today, we mentioned, is the area of law and order crime. There are a number of causes of crime. There's a lack of ethics, lack of home life, poverty, whatever you want to say, there could be a number of causes. But one of the great causes of crime is because of lack of strong law and order. Let me just read from an article, interesting article, quoted it once before. This is from the Reader's Digest in 1991, August 1991. There was a city, one of the major cities in the United States, was plagued by violence and crime. And it's called the police chief who took back the streets. Charleston, South Carolina was a city which had awful crime. In 1982, the turf war was raging in Charleston. Muggings and burglaries had reached record levels, and the murder and rape rates were nearly twice the national average. Charges of racism, brutality demoralized the police force. It got so bad that the police chief committed suicide, and the situation grew desperate. Gangs of teenagers armed with sticks, rocks, and bottles crashed the gates at a high school sports match. Up and down the stands they ran, beating spectators at random. "Do something," a woman screamed to the officer, but he didn't act, because the interim chief had ordered his men to practice restraint in arresting blacks. Incidentally, that an analysis recently came out of the Los Angeles riots, and their conclusion was is that the police force had underacted. They had underacted, and this is why it got to what it did. Now, there was a man, he's a black person, but his name is Reuben Greenberg. I think he became a Jew. And he became a cop. And he came to Charleston in 1982. Drug dealers, muggers, and rapists controlled many of the streets. Gunfights broke out in broad daylight. Criminals even assaulted uniformed police forces. And when he was a young cop, he wanted to know, why can't we control criminals? What's the problem? So he says the answer came during a trip to New York. While guiding Greenberg through a blighted area, a friend pointed to an old woman hobbling down the street, shopping bag in hand. She's got $50,000 cash in there, and everyone knows it. An old woman was walking in New York, a very tough area, with $50,000 cash in a shopping bag. And everyone knew it, and no one would bother her. Greenberg stared in amazement. Drug addicts, pushers, loitered on every side, yet no one touched her. So he asked why. So they said, because she works for an organized crime family, his companion continued. Mob justice is swift. Not even a strung-out addict would steal that money. Instantly, the simple equation was obvious to Greenberg. The mafia owned the streets by instant punishment, and it controlled the criminals. Crime was a turf war, he said. It's time for the police to win back the turf. He came to Charleston. He became the chief of police. They started a motto, it's time to take back the streets. It says, what was his viewpoints? Greenberg's view of his job is uncomplicated. Criminals should go to jail. No probation, no parole. Rehabilitation, he declares, is nonsense. The turnaround that followed in Charleston was nothing short of miraculous. While FBI figures showed that the number of reported crimes increased 6.3% nationwide from 1980 to 1989, reported crimes in Charleston fell by 40%. Murder was down by 57%. Rape was down by 31%. Car theft down by 30%. Burglary down by 53%. These are statistics no other U.S. city the size of Charleston can match. The drop in crime sparked an economic turnaround, with property values more than doubling in some suburbs. The greatest testament to Greenberg's success is that 46 square kilometers of adjacent communities have joined the city primarily for its police protection. And they say every city could use someone like him. He got offers from all the major cities to come to. Now, he writes that when he was still a young cop, and a young student, he writes, he was a student at Berkeley. Berkeley is from the most liberal campus in the United States. And then he started to give second thought to the attitudes that he picked up at Berkeley. Then he writes like this: a wave of crime was sweeping America, and Greenberg became convinced that progressive thinkers and academics had turned the criminal justice system on its head. Crooks had become victims, no longer accountable for their actions. Greenberg didn't accept it. And these were the results. In the end, he says, every tactic I use could have been developed by a high school dropout, he says. To stop criminals, you need only two things: the commitment of the police force and the people who care enough to take back the streets. Now, he hit the nail on the head. He says, sure, we can talk about rehabilitation. We can talk about poverty. We can talk about 100 things. But he says the so-called progressive thinkers, he has in inverted commas, and the academics, these were the liberals of Berkeley, had turned the criminal justice system on its head. Cook had become victims, no longer accountable for their actions. The law that the Almighty gave is a person is responsible and accountable for his actions, not someone else. And the law, it's the law's responsibility to administer this. And the justice must be swift, and it must be strong. We can't start thinking about criminal rights at the expense of the rights of the innocent. We can't start thinking about go easy on the criminals, because maybe there's reasons while innocent people are losing their lives every day. And in the Torah, we see very, very strong cases. Evil must be eliminated, the Torah says. And it tells us how to eliminate it. This is the famous episode of Shimon and Levi. The sister was abducted, and he wouldn't give back, the king wouldn't give back the sister. They went and they took revenge from the whole city. They wiped out the whole city. Yaakov was shaken up. He said, "What did you have to get so angry for? What did you have to react so much?" He says, "Now they'll all come against me." But he never cursed them, he cursed their wrath. And they said, "Akazona, you are going to allow people to abduct our sister, to make her into a harlot." It's interesting to note that when Moshe sent the spies into Eretz Yisrael, he said, "See what kind of barricades the cities have. If they are cities with great walls, then you know they are a weak nation. If they are cities without walls, then you know they are a strong nation." This is what he told them. "Because if they are cities with great barricades, then you know that they cannot rely on their own strength. If they're open cities, then they rely on their own strength." Look at the way we live today. We live barricaded in forts and jails because we can't rely on our own strength. We can't rely on the system of law. This is how weak we've become. If we go further with this point, we find that this quest for a total liberalization wants to liberate themselves not from a particular religion, but from all religions. There was an interesting letter that appeared once in Time magazine. This was in January 20th, 1992. Time magazine wrote an article, they wrote a cover story called "The Search for Mary." So there were many people, they praised the story, others criticized it. One person writes, he says, "Since when is a virgin birth history? How can you promote myth and superstition under the guise of news reporting?" This is what he writes, but it's interesting who he represents. It was a woman, Anna Nicole Gaylor, president, Freedom From Religious Foundation. The Freedom From Religion Foundation. Not the freedom of religion, but the freedom from religion. Now, this is a powerful group in the United States. This group, when there was a school that introduced a prayer and it introduced the name of God in the schools, there used to be an argument
that if it would be a Catholic prayer, the Protestants wouldn't like it. The Protestant prayer, the Jews wouldn't like it. So there was an argument. So they decided to make a prayer that would satisfy all denominations. This group brought the case to the Supreme Court of the United States and won to bar the prayer from school. Because they said, just like a person has right of freedom of religion, they also have the right of freedom from religion. And they brought this case to the highest court of the land. And they won. And the prayer was barred. And this was hailed as the liberal court, the progressive court. This is the liberal movement we're speaking about. Now this was exactly the Dor HaFlog. Freedom from religion. We want to be progressive, we want to be liberated, but what kind of liberation do we want? We want liberation from religion, we want liberation from the Almighty. Once you have liberation from the Almighty, so then you're allowed to murder. Why aren't you allowed to murder? You're allowed to steal. You're allowed to rape. Why not? Who told you, you know, who told you any different? And it's interesting to note that even the other religions that we don't agree with, but here there's one religion a minister writes in where he takes to task the article, because he says you make Mary into some type of god where people should worship her. He says worship means adoration, which is accorded exclusively to the one God. He says no religion that I know advocates worshiping Mary, certainly not the Roman Catholic religion does not. In other words, even the other religions that we disagree with, they didn't want to liberate themselves so from the religion. They didn't want to liberate themselves from the Almighty. Once a world liberates itself from the Almighty, it has cut off the cord which connects the world to the one who's brought the world in being. And then we see the abyss that we are witnessing today. Now, I mentioned that in this whole discussion, the word democracy is also always thrown in. If you're liberal, you believe in democratic rights. If not, you don't. Democracy also is something that has to be seen in its proper perspective. Democracy simply means a government by the people and of the people. Self-governing. We have to ask ourselves a question now. A government is supposed to be a force and a power over the people. It's supposed to hold the people in line. If the government is of the people and by the people, so this means that there is no government. Self-government means there's no government. A government is an external force that applies pressure on the people to see that they all stay in line. That's what the government is. That's what the court system is. If the government is merely made up of the people and by the people, so then they're the puppets of the people. If they're the puppets of the people, so then the people are the government. People are the government, not that the government is a government of the people. Now, when we say democracy, then, is that what we want? We want a democratic government to rule us? Or is that more a guise that we want no government? In other words, is that the reason why the liberals grab on to democracy so strongly? because democracy can be manipulated by the people. Democracy can be fashioned by the people. And we should ask a question there: who are the people? When we say democracy is a government of the people, who are the people? That's a question that every teacher should have asked in her classroom, and she won't get the right answer. I'll tell you who the people are. The people are the ones who are the most powerful. Democracy becomes the representatives, not of the people, becomes the representatives of the power interest groups, of the powerful lobbies. They are the ones who manipulate the government. Now, actually, there was another article, very interesting. It's an article that appeared in Time magazine, which is very strange because Time magazine is from the liberal media. And this was in May 4th, 1992, only 6 months ago. And they wrote, they said that even though democracy is gaining popularity throughout the world, and especially with the fall of communism, he says, recently, however, there have been steerings of counter-revolution. Now, we're not here to advocate a revolution against democracy. I just want to examine what we're talking about here. It says there's a lesson here. Now listen to this carefully. There's a lesson here. To sustain a stable democracy, a country needs more than elections and a parliament. It also needs a strong state. This is what Time magazine's writing in their essay. People shouldn't kid themselves. People shouldn't think that they have a democratic government merely by voting in officials and making a parliament, because that's a puppet state, because they are manipulated and controlled by the powers, the more powerful people. He says to sustain a stable democracy, a country needs more than elections and a parliament. It also needs a strong state. Once elected, politicians must be able to provide basic services to the population as a whole and to stand up to special interests such as big labor, the military establishment, the moneyed elite, and organized crime. Because they're finding that throughout the world, democracies are not of the people. Democracies are represented, take their orders from the drug barons, they take their orders from organized crime, they take their orders from oil barons, they take their orders from big labor unions. Because when you say the people rule, it's going to be like the Gemara tells us, the more powerful people will rule, not the weak ones will rule. And then he writes something very interesting. He says, now that the Soviet Union has fallen, and the Soviet Union was the repressive institutions, the Communist Party, and they have self-destructed, this has opened the way for freedom. He writes something very interesting. He says, but we have to be careful, because there's a very thin line between freedom and anarchy. And this is what we're speaking about. The suppressive state of Russia has fallen. It's opened its way now for freedom. But there's a very thin line between freedom and anarchy. Because total freedom, that means every person is free to do as he chooses. That's anarchy. There's no restraints or parameters whatsoever. There's a very thin line. And there's a very thin line then between a liberal movement for a justified cause or an anarchy. We'll go one step further. The Western world is going through times of weak government. We see officials become elected, and a couple of years later, they're out of office. If they do as they're told, good. If not, they're voted out. Laws are made and they're refashioned. The whims of the people. Now, in whose interest is there that there should be weak government? It's in the interest of organized crime, mafia, drug barons. It's in the interest of the oil barons. It's in the interest of the tobacco industry. It's in the interest of the powerful labor unions. It's in the interest of the liberal press and media that there should be weak governments, because the more garbage they can print in the papers without restraint from the government, but the more newspapers they'll sell and the more money they'll make. Let me point out another article which is an illustration of this. This took place last week. Last week, an article in the newspaper, Business Day. Corporate decision makers heard yesterday how smokers in the workplace could be burning up their profits. There was a seminar on tobacco here in South Africa. It was convened by, amongst others, the Health Department. The National Health Deputy Director General, Dr. Cohen Slaber, spoke. So you see that this is coming from very, very good sources, Health Department and National Health Deputy Director General. He said, tobacco caused about 30% of all deaths between the ages of 35 and 69. About 30% of all deaths between the ages of 35 and 69. And he said, the most recent scientific findings from the United States claim tobacco smoke in the environment was responsible for up to 30% of cases of lung cancer amongst non-smokers. 30% of cases of lung cancer amongst non-smokers was caused by tobacco smoke in the environment. Now, this is a crisis. If 30% of deaths between 35 and 69 in the prime of life is caused by tobacco, to smokers, and if 30% of all lung cancer is caused by tobacco to non-smokers, certainly it's the government's responsibility to do something about this. That's government's responsibility. Medical Research Council spokesman Dr. Derek Yach said the expected legislation, which would also bar the sale of cigarettes to children, had been watered down due to pressure from the tobacco industry. This is democracy in action, our type of democracy in action. Now let me ask you a question. I left the United States over 20 years ago. When I still lived in the United States, the fight of barring tobacco, putting restraints on tobacco, was going on in the United States. Not long before that, about 30 years ago, President Kennedy initiated the space program. In 30 years, they've gotten from nothing to the moon and back 40, 50 times. And in 30 years, they still can't put limitations on a package of cigarettes. And in South Africa, they can't even get on the package of cigarettes like they have in America, that this could be dangerous to you, to your health. Gosh, that's a question. 30 years they got back and forth to the moon and who knows where else, and in that same time they haven't been successful in putting some restraints for public safety on a package of cigarettes. What is the answer? Tobacco industry. Because the liberals want weak government, because weak government means one is liberated from restraints. Strong government means there's going to be someone there who's telling me what to do. So we want weak government. Someone who cannot tell me what to do. And therefore the most powerful member of society will tell the government what to do. Like the tobacco industry, which will contribute enormous taxes or enormous grants or whatever it might be. Or they can convince society that an industry which is hazardous for society is a justified industry because it gives people employment. You can convince people like that. So that's how democracy gets into the discussion with liberal rights. The Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, many years ago wrote a letter. And he wrote in his letter, he says, lately we've been hearing reports of natural calamities which we've never heard before. He says, for example, we're getting reports from other countries where there's big floods and earthquakes, and he says, this is things we've never heard before. And he says, the Torah tells us when that's coming, that's a warning to society that you're not in line. States, Ruach Se'orei Eiseh Dvorei. Even the wild wind, even the tornado, is merely fulfilling the word of the Almighty. He says, don't write it off. Don't write it off that it just happens. It's just coincidental. Ruach Se'orei Eiseh Dvorei. Even the wild wind and the tornado fulfills the word, is merely fulfilling the word of the Almighty. Today, in our days, natural calamities also have become a way of life, just like the calamities that man brings on itself. There's not a day we don't read about major fires and earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and hurricanes. California and Florida and the Gulf of Mexico has had some of the worst in their history, and so forth and so on, and in other countries. This is nature rebelling. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave laws, and these laws were given to nature. They were ingrained in nature and they were given to the people. And these are the restraints that are placed on man. And it is the courts, the systems of law and order, of justice, that were entrusted and invested with authority to see that this is carried out. When the Mashiach comes, then there'll be the Sanhedrin, the great court, and there'll be the Melech, the king, and between the two they will have enormous powers to see that these laws are carried out. But we don't have to be afraid of enormous powers. The criminal has to be afraid of enormous powers. The big industries that want undue profits, those that have greed, organized crime, or others, they have to be afraid. This is the system of laws and mitzvahs which HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed into the world. And what we have seen in this past century is the methodical, subtle uprooting of that one by one, to the point where we can come to such levels of public promiscuity, immorality, public crime, graft, corruption, lawlessness, and people throw up their hands and say the government is helpless. The system has rendered the government helpless. We said the governments are impotent to do anything about it because the systems have made them impotent. And this is the work in the last century of what we call, was referred to as progressive thinking, liberal thinking, modern thinking. Again, justified liberalism is 100% good. The Torah is full of liberal ideas. But to liberate oneself, what he wants, total freedom, that's like that writer wrote, that the line between freedom and anarchy is a thin line, and this is what we're seeing in the Soviet Union today. They've gained freedom and anarchy at the same time. So this is perhaps an examination of, have the liberals of the Western world gone too far? And why they have projected us. They talk, it's fashionable to talk of the great strides we made. You should know that our century is living in the dark ages. If one will examine the situation, he'll see we live in the dark ages. Mirza Hashem, the Mashiach will come. And he will bring the light of Torah to the world and bring back to the world the structure of order in which man then can strive not to be liberated, but he can strive for greatness and perfection through the code of laws that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the world in general and the Tayyag Mitzvahs to Klal Yisrael in particular.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.